Gators Breakdown, the Gators fan podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. And joining me for this episode is Will Miles from his site, ReadAndReaction.com. You can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC. Will, busy time. Last week we had Dan Mullen here in Jacksonville for a Gator gathering. Got a lot of useful information at an interview with him before before he went and spoke to the crowd, and also some interviews or some useful info during that as well. But then also open practice this past Saturday for the Gators, and busy time leading up to spring ball.
Yeah, man, they got you busy down there going to practices and interviewing Mullen and, getting prime real estate when you go to these Dan Mullen talks. So, hey, it's great that the fans get the information from you. I wish I could be there with you, but obviously I'm still freezing my butt off up here. So,
yeah, Mullen, pretty friendly after practice as well. Harmonic Woods, a few members of the Harmonic Woods tailgate made it to practice as well. Mullen took a picture with us after practice, so that was good. And signed one of the Harmonic Woods tailgaters t-shirts. So it was good getting to see those guys again, get to see them again for spring game. But, a lot of people we get to see during the football season, not so much during the off season. But spring ball and open spring practice brings some fans together.
Yeah, man, the season doesn't really end anymore, right? I mean, no. The season didn't really – you got the end of the season on New Year's Day and then signing day and now the spring game and all that sort of stuff. It just feels like – especially when you don't miss the bowl game, it feels like it's a much more continuous thing. And, it was interesting. I think, when people go back and listen to your interview with Mullen, it really did – he sounds more relaxed this offseason than he did last season. He was a lot more intense, I think, last season, maybe setting the tone for the players, sort of what they were going to understand. But even towards the fans, I mean, he made it a point to thank the fans and make sure that he, expressed his gratitude for their support. And that was a little bit different than some of the things he said last year too. So, good to see that he's relaxed. I think that means he's probably confident with where the team is right now. And we certainly hope that's the case.
Absolutely. And shout out to everybody who said, hey, open practice and last week at the Gator Gathering. A lot of fun and a lot of good things going on here at Gators Breakdown. We got a lot to get into here in pertaining to spring ball. But before we get there, remember, you can find Gators Breakdown on newsforjacks.com/GatorsBreakdown. There you'll find an archive of all the Gators Breakdown episodes, as well as articles from the News for Jacks sports team. Catch the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and Spotify. And when using those services, please share, rate, and review the show. And on social media, follow Gators Breakdown on Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. Well, being at the open practice, it was apparent. This is Felipe Frank. He's not only the starting quarterback of this team. There is no question about that anymore. But he is evolving into being a better quarterback. And this is his offense, his team. I think he's taking it all in sometimes with a chip on his shoulder. He's confident, in control, but he does have that chip on his shoulder. That mean streak that helped him last season, it's still there. He's looked great all spring so far. I'm trying not to get too excited and put too much into spring practice, but he does look better than he ever has. Whether it be in past season practices or games, he simply just looks better.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the key question going into 2019, right, is whether that switch that got flipped in South Carolina is about halfway through that game is a permanent thing, or whether, it had something to do with the competition or, because the guy who showed up against Florida State and against Michigan is a really good quarterback. And if Florida's got him the entire year, well, then it's going to be a really successful year. So, the fact that he's sort of taking shots, even though he's in the practice jersey, is a I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign, because you want your quarterback to run out of bounds when he needs to. And to be honest, I think that's something that he's going to have to learn this year. I mean, there were times last year where just out of desperation, you needed him to put his head down and make sure that he got the first down or got the touchdown or what have you. But I think in 2019, there are going to be some times where he's going to have to be smart about things and maybe not take a hit just because Florida's going to want him out there.
Yeah, I was surprised Saturday at and I was asking Thomas Goldkamp and Nick De La Torre about this, and how physical have the quarterbacks been? And I was surprised the amount of running they were doing Saturday in the open practice. You know, but it was apparent Saturday. You know, the first play of 11 on 11, it took some time to develop, and Franks gets pressured. He's not panicking as he avoids a heavy rush and then hits an open receiver over the middle. He wasn't flustered, kept his eyes downfield, and makes a perfect throw. So, you know, as the day went on in more 11-on-11, running routes on air, you know, it really didn't matter the situation. He was on point throughout most of the day. It's the best I've ever seen him throw the ball. So, but Will, and the thing that got headlines on Saturday, we also got the emotional and chip on his shoulder Franks on Saturday, as you kind of alluded to there. At one point, you know, Franks gets sacked, or what would be a sack in a real game, by Zachary Carter, and Carter just kind of wrapped up Felipe Franks. And but, you know, but it wasn't a hard hit or anything like that, but Franks didn't like it for whatever reason, and Carter then taps Franks on the helmet, and I'm not sure if anything was said, as we weren't too close to the action. Then all of a sudden, Frank zings the ball at Carter in the back of the helmet, and that started a, you know, kind of a ruckus between the offense and defense, but it didn't really last all that long. And then comes the next play. Frank's running left for a pretty good gain, and then lowers his shoulder and runs through Sean Davis. When Frank's, you know, he pretty much knows he can't be hit as a quarterback right now as they're practicing. So, you know, there was some jawing back and forth, and that pretty much leads to the coaches moving on to the next drills before it escalated any more than that. So, Will, I don't think it's a big deal with all that went on Saturday. It sounds much bigger than it really is, and with everything surrounding Franks being a positive right now, I really do think that plays into kind of the way we're looking at it. You know, if you know, we know how fiery he can be, and that helped him towards the end of last season. You know, and now if this was the Franks that has been struggling, kind of the Georgia-Missouri game or seasons before that, then maybe the narrative is a little bit different with this. But seeing how well he's playing, seeing how well your reports are being made, you know, I think as much as we hear about team scuffles and altercations all the time, it's kind of, you know, just one of those things that just happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think these things happen in every team, right? It's just maybe not quite as visible, or at least not reported as heavily as this one was. And, you know, I mean, the reality is that when a quarterback is cocky, or when a quarterback shows some attitude, you know, he's going to be criticized for it if he plays poorly, and he's going to be lauded for it if he plays well. No one ever said anything about Johnny Manziel when he was at Texas A&M when he was winning games. But all of a sudden, when he gets to the NFL and he has some trouble, then, oh, it's his personality. And I think, you know, last year we saw that a little bit in the South Carolina game where Franks was shushing fans. You know, after that game, there was an awful lot of talk about that. And then all of a sudden, Florida started winning, and nobody said anything about it because he was winning the games. In fact, then the attitude was a good thing. So, you know, I think we can probably read about as much into it as we want. I'm not sure that it really matters. I think, you know, the biggest thing is do his teammates respect him, or do they think he's taking cheap shots? And I think from everything we've heard, they respect him. And so, you know, this is just a good competition during a spring practice. And to be honest, they probably need something to liven it up every once in a while and get the juices flowing. And this is probably just that.
Yeah, I think you can see if you follow the players on social media, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, however it may be, you see them. Well, last week it was a video of Franks walking into a locker room with some kind of cowboy boots on, and guys were making fun of him, you know, so it good-hearted fun. And then you had the video Friday night of, and Felipe Franks is there again. He's one of the guys throwing Nick Savage into the cold bathtub for Nick Savage's 30th birthday. And then, you know, that stuff just happens a day later at practice and all that. And, you know, like I said, it didn't really – there was some – the defense was hitting hard kind of the rest of the practice as practice moved through 7-on-7 and 11-on-11. And when DBs could take a shot at running backs, or linebackers could take a shot at running backs, and DBs could take a shot at receivers, there was some hits there. And I don't necessarily know if that would have been the case if Franks didn't, you know, do what he did earlier in the practice. But yeah, there's not much to be made of it. And I think from everything that we've seen, you know, from a lack of off-field trouble and kind of the things going on with the team and the coaching staff, and it looks like how close they are together, it is much to do about nothing, and really just a talking point at this point.
Yeah, I mean, and it sets the tone, right? I mean, like you just said, that the practice was more physical because that sort of set the tone. So, you know, if that's Frank's style of leadership, then great. I mean, if the team tackles better because they practiced it in the spring, then that's a good thing, right? And again, as long as they respect him, and it seems like they do, like you said, then I don't think it's any issue at all. Now, I mean, you know, it becomes an issue if you go out there and lay a couple of eggs in the middle of the year and all of a sudden people are talking about, you know, attitude issues. But, you know, again, if you play well, nobody says anything. If you play poorly, everybody looks to parse those sorts of things. And, you know, when he wasn't playing very well against Georgia and Missouri, you know, everybody sort of looked at the attitude and you know, that there wasn't really that cockiness there. And then it came out against South Carolina. All of a sudden he's playing well and everybody thinks it's a great thing. So, you know, I think it's probably much ado about nothing, and it's spring ball, and we're all looking for some way to read into what's going on. But the reality is, we're not going to know until that game against Miami. And if he comes out and throws for 300 yards, he can say whatever he wants.
Absolutely. We'll go and kind of move it along the offense right now. Right now at running back, it's LaMichael Perine and everyone else. And I mean that in a good way. You know, Perine is looking that good. And the staff knows what they have in him, especially after, you know, last season, and especially how he ended last season. We talk about how Franks ended last season. Perine probably ended the season just as well and on a high note just as much as Felipe Franks did. You know, it's time to see just how much of a workload Damian Pierce and Malik Davis can handle. And I tell you what, well, I was really impressed with those two as well. Davis showing no signs of injury and still quick and smooth, as we remember him two seasons ago, and had a few good runs on Saturday. And another part of playing running back is pass blocking, Will. I know you really look at that. And Damian Pierce had a great block on a blitzing C.J. Williams, and that gave Franks enough time to complete a pass to a tight end toward the end of practice as they were going on 11-11. So, yeah, we know what we have in Perine, and I still think he's going to be special. But I'm still wondering how the carries are split. Last year it was split almost 50-50, or not really 50-50, but even carries between Perine and Scarlett, those two led the way. I'm kind of interested to see they're not featuring him as much in spring, so they're kind of maybe saving him for fall, and they know what he can do. I am very interested in seeing how the carries get dispersed between Pierce Davis and even a player like Iverson Clement.
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably has a lot to do with keeping him healthy throughout the course of the year. I mean, you know, once you get up by 20 points, you don't want to waste the running back who's going to be your bell cow for the entire year. And that was one of the benefits in having both Scarlett and Perine last year and having them split carries. I suspect that what you probably see is Perine getting about as many carries as last year, maybe 10 or 20% more. So he had 134 carries last year, averaged 6.2 yards per attempt. I don't know that you're going to see a whole lot more than that. Maybe you see him up in that 150, 160 range, you know, where he's getting 12, 13, 14 carries a game rather than 8 or 9. And then you split the carries that Scarlett got between Davis and Pierce. I think that's probably what we'll see, especially, again, when you go into those games that aren't necessarily the you expect them to be blowouts. Now, last year, coming into the year, we weren't sure whether we'd see any blowouts because we hadn't seen any in 3 years under McElwain, really. But last year, there were some of those, and now there's an opportunity to get those younger guys playing time. You know, I remember against Tennessee, really sort of the first half of the year, Pierce was sort of the finisher, right? They brought him in to hit that one long run to put the game away, and I think it's sort of the same thing. And, you know, I think we also forget that 2 years ago, Malik Davis was a really good back and was really the best guy in the backfield. He clearly had an explosion that Perine didn't have, at least at the time. Now, Perine has proven himself to be much more durable and proven himself to be very consistent and proven himself to be quite a threat in the pass game as well, especially against Michigan. He had that long screen pass against Vanderbilt that got him 3 points at the end of the half. You know, those sorts of things, starting to differentiate himself in other ways. You mentioned pass protection. You know, Florida's offensive line played a lot better last year than they did 2 years ago, but I think they went something like 15 sacks the entire year. You don't do that without running backs who are picking up the blitz. And so Mullen's not going to play guys who don't pick it up. And I think he's proven that, and we'll see sort of how the guys pick things up as they go along. But that's what I would sort of suspect, is that Perine is going to get the bulk of the carries, but then the carries that went to Scarlett last year are probably going to be split between those other two.
Yeah, I think that's the way I lean too, Will. And that's something else that's going to happen in the very first kind of warm-up play, where they were still in the indoor facility at this point. They hadn't moved to the outside yet, but the very first play where the offense lines up, Will, Kadarius Toney was in the backfield. And later on in practice, he motions into the backfield and gets a carry as well. So there's that's going to happen, and also taking carries. And that leads me to, you know, where does this leave a player like Iverson Clement, who I also think can be, you know, a pretty good running back in his own right, but he's not playing above Piran. He's not going to play above Pierce or Davis, it doesn't look like right now. Kadarius Toney is going to get touches in the backfield as well. Florida's deep at running back, and we know that. And if they stay healthy, I do wonder where a player like Iverson Clement can make his way. Maybe they can move him to receiver, but they're deep there as well. As far as this year goes, maybe he can maybe get a little more play. He's a running back first and foremost, but if we want some playing time, they may see him at receiver a little bit. And I'm kind of talking more towards next year because of the depth they had there. So I do wonder where a player like Iverson Clement can go for the 2019 season.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it is going to be determined by what he shows on special teams. I mean, I think that's really where you look first, right? Is, you know, when Chris Rainey came into the program, you know, more than a decade ago at this point, you know, that's where he made his mark. A lot of Urban Meyer's players made their mark on special teams. And quite honestly, I think that's how you're going to earn your playing time on the field. The fact that they're moving Toney into running back, or at least having him come in and set in the running back, means that they feel like they're pretty comfortable at the wide receiver spot. And so I don't know that you're going to be able to break into either one of those things. I think you're going to have to break in as a kick returner or a punt returner, or, you know, coming after punts and kicks on the defensive side of the ball. That's where I would look for Clement to make a mark. And then, you know, obviously – the SEC is a tough place to play, and there are three running backs in front of them. But 2 years ago, the running backs were going down like flies. Mm-hmm. and, you know, that's why people, you know, that's why a lot of the guys who got in. And the same thing may happen this year, right? So you never can foresee what's going to happen. He's just a redshirt freshman. He's got an awful lot of time to establish himself. But I would say that special teams is a place where he can differentiate himself. And man, what a nice problem to have, to have very, very talented guys who can't get on the field. So, it's, you know, he may not think it's that great, but I certainly do, to be able to put guys who are high level talent on special teams to make them earn the reps there. And then to have them come in their sophomore, junior and senior year to contribute, rather than having to always shoehorn the guy who's maybe more talented, but a lot more green, onto the field very, very early. So, you know, I suspect that Clement is going to get an opportunity this year to do a few things, whether it's on special teams or whether it's, you know, because of injury. And when he does, he's going to have to take advantage of it.
Well, let's move on to the biggest question mark of the team and the offense as well. And it's the, you know, right now, the starting five on the offensive line, Stone Forsyth, Brett Hagee, Nick Buchanan, Chris Blake, John DeLance, that's from left to right there. Coming along nice. Yeah, the first, if you want to call him starting five right now, that kind of seems to be the starting five at this point in spring practice. You know, pairing that group with the running backs that we just discussed and the quarterback running as well. You know, and this starting five on the offensive line makes for a pretty powerful running attack. You know, they were physical in practice, opening plenty of holes throughout the day. I thought the defensive line got better towards the end of the day, led by T.J. Slayton, Elijah Conliff, and Mamu Diabate there as well late. But, you know, but this group of offensive linemen is putting it together maybe ahead of expectations, especially on the ground and in the ground game. Gene DeLance is you know, getting some notice out there at right tackle, and Stone Forsyth is living up to what I thought he'd be so far at left tackle. And there's still some growing pains there, especially in pass blocking at the tackle position and inside as well. The pass blocking, the run blocking is well ahead of the pass blocking. That's pretty apparent right there. There's still, you know, still showing some growing pains here, and this group is so new. And Will, it leads me to what we may see this year's on what we may see in this year's offense, and maybe being more like I thought it would be last season. There's a deep stable of running backs we just discussed. You have a quarterback that can run the ball. You have an offensive line that looks to be pretty good run blocking. This may be where the run game is even more of a focus this year, and the passing game is more converting third downs and hitting large chunk type of plays. That's not to say that the passing game isn't any good or can't be any good, won't be any good eventually. But even with Frank's progressing and the deep core wide receivers that's there, and the offensive line may turn to what we saw late last season, where the run games really got going late in the season and then the entire offense opened up.
Yeah, I don't think it's really a surprise that the offensive line is doing better on the ground than they are through the air. I mean, I think a lot of times guys who don't have a whole lot of experience out in the field tend to be better run blocking than they are pass blocking anyway, especially when you're going up against guys like Jabari Zuniga there on the edge, and Grantham trying to confuse people, and, you know, stunts. I know that I read were I think Thomas Goldkamp had written that the stunts were really giving, especially the second team, trouble. But really, you know, those sorts of things, complex defensive concepts that force you to communicate when you don't have a lot of continuity, are gonna show up in the passing game versus in the running game, where you've got your assignment, you get out in space, and you can sort of dominate just physically there. You know, I think if we learned one thing last year, it's that Mullen can adjust to his personnel. So in the game against Mississippi State, where he didn't think his offensive line could really block that defensive line, the ball got out really quick on a bunch of screen passes, right? Especially because Mississippi State was playing off on the outside. And I think you'll see the same thing next year, that if Mullen doesn't think his offensive line can hold up against a particular defensive line, then yeah, he's going to do things like screen passes. He's going to do things like bubble screens, quick slants, like, you know, just the kind of, and even we saw the other day, I think, and at least I saw on Twitter that they ran the tight end pitch up the middle. And that, again, is something designed to slow down the defensive line. So I suspect that we will see some things that are scheme-based that help the offensive line in some capacity. I also don't think it's a coincidence that they have a bunch of tight ends on the roster. Mm. And I'm really interested to see how they use the tight ends. I mean, I know Kyle Pitts isn't necessarily classified as a tight end, really. I mean, he's playing a lot like a wide receiver. But, you know, Kroll is a big guy. Can he block and really sort of give him an advantage? A lot like New England's had with Gronkowski the last few years, where you got a big guy who can block but can also win the one-on-one battles in the passing game. And, you know, if they can get if they get good pass protection from the running back and good pass protection from the tight end, or an ability to chip to help the tackles on the outside, I think they'll be all right. I have a lot of confidence in John Hevesy. I mean, I think one of the things last year was, you know, the offensive line wasn't very good 2 years ago, and last year they got progressively better throughout the year. And I think we'll probably see that this year. I think maybe they're very run heavy against Miami in some of those opening games, but you would expect them to open up the offense as they go. In some capacity, the same way they opened up the offense with Franks last year as the season wore on. I mean, you know, they were very exclusively one running back, one tight end early on in the year. And then by the time they got to the Michigan game, they had formations all over the place. And that's just sort of the guys learning the offense. And I think, you know, again, for the offensive line, these are new guys, not necessarily new to the system this year, but new to being out on the field. And they're going to have to sort of feed them slowly. They're not going to be able to give them the entire offense, you know, all at once. And that's okay.
Yeah, we have plenty of time to preview it going into the season too, but it does make me wonder if we'll see Emory Jones more early in the season, more so than we thought, to kind of keep Franks from getting hit so much as well. Because, I mean, he's your guy. He's your quarterback. Yes, you're going to want him to run to keep defenses honest, but also to limit the hits on Franks. I do think, and seeing Emory, he did struggle Saturday more than he has all spring. You know, Kyle Trask looked pretty good Saturday. But, you know, Emory's the number two guy right now. He still looked really good, really smooth running the ball on Saturday, but didn't have his best practice. But I do think, you know, with the way this offensive line is shaking out right now, and maybe early on in the season as well, that I do think we might see more Emory Jones than we thought. But look, for this offensive line, plenty of time for the group to come together. Finding depth is going to be key. Can Richard Garage start pressing for one of the starting tackle roles? Hagee and Buchanan, I mean, the most experienced guys of the group right now, but they're going to need some help at some point in the season. And early enrollee Kingsley Aguakin done some good things at center his short time there. And can Noah Banks eventually get back in the fold, somebody we haven't seen or probably won't see all spring? You know, there needs to be about eight guys that the staff likes for fall camp. And with all the youth there, it's going to take some time and patience. And as you said, it doesn't need to be perfect right now.
No, and there's a lot of guys coming in the fall. So, you know, they're going to be able to pick from not just the guys who are there right now, but some of the true freshmen who are going to be coming in. And, you know, if you're talking about guys who are physically gifted, I mean, the guys who are coming in from this past recruiting class are probably the most physically gifted group of offensive linemen who've come to Florida in quite a long time. And so I would expect some of those guys to get an opportunity, or at least push the guys who've been there in the spring. So, you know, these guys are going to have to pick it up. It's a competition at every position. Mullen's made that clear. And so if those guys come in the fall and they're better, they're going to play. But I think the future at offensive line is really bright. But obviously early in the season, that's a place where, you know, Mullen may have to scheme around it. And that's just something that he's going to have to figure out before the opener.
I think something we probably have some confidence in too. So, On defense, Will, got to see a good bit of Tadarius Slayton, Elijah Conliff, Zachary Carter on Saturday, Mahmoud Diabate as well to a lesser degree. And I really like what I saw from him, but he did get a rude awakening one time when he was a pancake or kind of stonewalled by T.J. Moore late in 11-on-11 drills. A kind of a, you know, welcome, hey, freshman, welcome to the SEC. Toward the end of practice, Slayton was in the backfield swatting down a pass, which he did multiple times that day, getting a sack. I really think Florida can be confident in what they have. On the defensive front right now, Grenard has come in. And it's such a good fit for what Todd Grantham really wants to do. Brings a lot of experience in this defense. And I think he'll fill in nice for Ja'Kai Polite, much like I predicted in the spring. Will Zuniga's not really getting many reps, kind of like LaMichael Perine. They know what they have in him, not getting many reps because the coaches know, hey, look, he can do this. Let's get these guys that have some less experience in here, see what they can do. But when he's been in, he's been getting in the backfield. You know, so that pairing of him and Grenard will be a force. With Bernie at linebacker, this defense is so fast. I was impressed with this the speed overall on defense on Saturday. And, hey, what little I saw of Cedric Brunson and Josiah Pierre, so two young linebackers there, kind of showing up. Brunson was very physical, lay in the wood in practice, and then Pierre showed some good speed and burst off the line. You tie this all together with a secondary that can cover, and I mean cover, Will. Look, we know how good C.J. Henderson is and how fast he is, but I focused on him for probably two or three plays in a row, and it's just ridiculous watching him. He is glue. And even if a wide receiver got to catch a pass, most were short catches, and Henderson was right there to make a would-be tackle. Brian Edwards was everywhere Saturday, picking off Emory Jones in back-to-back passes. One was a deflection off of a wide receiver. So with Grantham coming back, Will, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, man. This defense is going to be even better than last season.
Well, I mean, I certainly hope so. I think, you know, the first guy you really mentioned is going to be one of the big keys. T.J. Slayton is going to have to take up a couple of guys up front, and he doesn't necessarily have to get a ton of penetration, though you would obviously like him to do that. But really, you know, my biggest concern when it comes to the defense, like, they're a lot faster than they were last year and certainly faster than they were 2 years ago. The concern is what happens when they come up against a team that can really run the ball. And, you know, if an offensive lineman gets on Amari Bernie, Bernie isn't big enough right now to be able to be able to stand up against that. And so having defensive tackles and defensive linemen who can occupy multiple offensive linemen, not let them get to the second level, allows somebody like Bernie to run sideline to sideline. And all of a sudden you've got a really dynamic defense. So, you know, the defense, obviously, I don't think any of us are really worried about the defensive backs, especially if Marco Wilson comes back healthy. Certainly nice to hear that some of the safeties are stepping up and really shutting things down as well. But I think, you know, when you really look at how the defense excels this year, it's going to be based on how do those guys up front. So you talk about Conliff and Dunlap and Schuler and maybe even Langham being able to set the edge. I mean, that to me is going to be the place where, if they can allow those linebackers to roam free, we already know what David Reese can do when he doesn't get an offensive lineman on him. And I think Bernie's going to be just really dynamic if they can keep him clean. And so that'll be sort of the key for the season.
Yeah, I think the speed is, I mean, unreal on what they have there. We kind of spoke to that and just how much we've seen players just line up, you know, not really at one spot or another. They move them around, and the versatility, I think, really lends itself to having a lot of speed on this defense. Will, kind of a spring headline here, and kind of weird to have a transfer in the middle of spring practice. You know, guys kind of wait till after, but Tonius Clayton is going to transfer from Florida, Will. And, you know, of course it was, we've heard rumors for years, you know, not years, well, for months now, that Clayton, you know, may not be getting it done at Florida. A lot of people kind of expected it maybe toward the end of last year. He came back this spring, and I kind of just think maybe just because of maybe wanting to kind of see where he fit through spring ball, and maybe the first 2 weeks wasn't going his way. And he's going to decide to transfer from Florida. In the letter he penned on Twitter, he said, "First off, I want to thank God for the opportunities that were given to me ever since this thing started to kick off for the past 3 years. I've given the University of Florida everything I've gotten on and off the field, and I'm forever grateful for Coach Mack, Coach Rumpf, and Coach Collins for recruiting me and allowing me to come attend a wonderful university and meet my amazing teammates and amazing professors here at the university. After talking it over with my family, I've decided to transfer and see what my future holds in store for me and my son and my family. Please understand this decision is harder than it sounds, but please understand I will be forever grateful for Gator Nation for their support, and I wish you all the best. AC out. So, so on Saturday, Will, I had a fan send a conversation to me back channels on Twitter, DM, and he had a conversation where Clayton just came out and informed him of his plans to transfer. This was right after open practice on Saturday. Kind of thought the timing was odd, and also odd to let it be known out in public like that. But you know, we just figured if it was going to happen, that it would be after spring ball. Well, you know, and now just discussing the defense that we just discussed, one thing I can say is I barely saw Clayton on the field Saturday. So maybe he was just waiting to see how he would fit in this spring, like I said, and if he could crack the rotation. But, you know, it doesn't look like he's too much in the plans right now. I did notice in his letter he left on Twitter there that he didn't mention the current staff at all. So maybe there's something to that. But, Will, you know, the 27th ranked player in the 2016 class will transfer from the University of Florida.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big whiff as far as recruiting is concerned, but you know, best of luck to him. I think, you know, he's been nothing but high class when he's been at the university from everything that I've heard, and you know, that you know, he's worked as hard as he could, I'm sure, and certainly still values the time that he had at Florida. And once you're a Gator, you're always a Gator. So best of luck to him. Obviously, I think the transition to Mullen probably seemed like a fresh start for him, because he didn't really show a whole lot in the first year when McElwain was here, but obviously that hasn't really materialized either. And, you know, when you're not recruited by the guy who takes over, then it becomes a question of, you know, what happens to, you know, are you able to build that relationship, or do the guys that he brings in who are his guys start to establish themselves and sort of, and differentiate themselves. And so, you know, I don't think it'd be a surprise to see him pop up at Georgia Tech with Collins, or maybe even Central Michigan with McElwain, where, you know, he would have the opportunity to play there. And as far as the timing is concerned, I mean, he might have wanted to see where he stood in the spring. I don't know what his status is in terms of graduating. So if he graduates after the spring semester, you know, if he can pick up an extra class over the summer or something because he's not out there on the field, mm-hmm. then maybe he can graduate and be a transfer who plays immediately. I just don't know the details of that. So, you know, I mean, I think at the end of the day, again, it's one of those things where, you know, we said it with Clement, it's a good problem to have guys who are really talented who can't make their way onto the field. You certainly want somebody like Clayton to be out there and be a contributor, but if he's not going to do that, then, you know, it's one of those things where you're just like, okay, you wish him well and say good luck.
Yeah, absolutely. It was going to be tough to get playing time over Grenard, the younger Reese, Chatfield, Diabate, Pierre, and all that with Jeremiah Moon, who's missing spring and will be coming back in the fall. So, as you said, plenty of players there, plenty of depth, plenty of talent there for Florida. You know, maybe a fresh start is just what Clayton needs. You know, just been a lot of rumors about, you know, maybe him not being happy with playing time and all that. So maybe you can go out there and get some playing time, you know, kind of, and go make a name for himself, you know, somewhere that happens all the time with transfers. And I hope he, as you said, hope he goes off and does well. And, you know, as you said, there's no telling. I think going maybe to Georgia Tech with Collins, who's recruiting pretty well for Georgia Tech right now, if that would be a fit there, or maybe somewhere in a lower level school if he wants to go play right away. But as you said, don't really know the details behind that, but we'll be sure to keep an eye on where Antonius Clayton ends up next. So, Will, threw out the tweet. Wanted to ask some of our listeners out there, you know, what are your thoughts on spring practice so far? Positive, negative, likes or dislikes? And here we go from Kevin Rowell. Let's see. Love to see that high-level competition amongst different position groups again. Excited about growth and development of the quarterback room. Spring ball so far has reiterated that this team's success will depend on how well the offensive line develops as we move forward. Well, we did hit on a lot of that there, but kind of just going to what we talked about with Clement and Clayton right there, listener here, Kevin, good friend of mine, does also mention and see that, hey, look, high-level competition is out there, and we see it all over. You know, Franks is getting a little bit of push from quarterback depth. Running backs there, offensive line's got to figure out. Wide receiver, they're so deep. You kind of know what you have there. We'll see what some young guys can maybe do to crack the rotation there. But and then there's competition everywhere. Safety, linebacker, defensive end. kind of behind Jabari Zuniga. There is a lot of good competition right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Mullen's been saying ever since he got here. I think the things you're sort of looking for are those guys who are going to separate themselves as the guys who are really the difference makers. I think we've seen that a little bit with Grimes. Hopefully we'll see some of that with Tony in the backfield. But, you know, Florida's only a couple of guys away from being really, really dynamic on both sides of the ball. And it's nice to see that. And also nice to see that if there's an injury, it feels like there are guys who can step in.
Absolutely. Here in Harold Jackson, good friend here from here in Jacksonville. Harold says, I like how they're giving more reps to the other backs because they know what they have in Piran. Smart. Keep his load down for the season and for the NFL. We kind of hit that on for sure. Kind of a couple thoughts here. One from College Football 24/7, and I'll combine that because he says Jacob Copeland for sure. And that kind of goes along with Michael Jeffrey here. He's happy about some newish names that we are hearing. Malik Steele, Bernie, DeLand, Pitts. Hope to hear more about Zachary Carter, Garage, Antonius Clayton, Emery, Pierce, and Copeland. So I'll kind of go through there for the names that I hope to hear more about. Zachary Carter had a really good practice on Saturday. Really disruptive. Had his hands up in the air, knocked down some passes. It was also involved in hitting Franks and getting a ball thrown at his helmet. So that's the storyline there. Richard Garage, we'll see. Kind of offensive line, we talked about how it's shaking out now, but I still think there's a chance for him to push for one of those starting tackle roles. Antonius Clayton, of course, we hit on. He's going to transfer. Emory Jones, as I said, has looked good all spring long. Did have his worst day on Saturday. I wouldn't say terrible by any means. I still think he can be a really big weapon running the ball, but he's got a good live arm from as well. Pierce is really showing up as well. And I think him, Malik Davis is right behind P. Ryan, and I don't think you can really say they're a 2A and 2B right now. I think you'll be happy with either one. Will, I did notice right at the beginning of practice, Jacob Copeland did come out. He was in street clothes. Didn't participate in practice once again. Hamstring injury still bugging him. While I would love for him to be out there, I hate to say it, but I'm not sure how much playing time he'd actually get with how deep Florida is at wide receiver. Does he bring being a different dynamic out there? Sure he does, but with how deep Florida is and snaps are going to be limited anyway, he's going to be needed much more this time next season. And he needs to be healthy. He needs to be ready to fully go then more so than now.
Yeah, well, you absolutely want him to be healthy, particularly if he's going out in the spring during spring practice. Though, obviously, as young as he is, these are reps that are important for him, not necessarily just this year, but for next year as well. But, the other thing is that, again, I go back to what I said about Clement. Like, special teams is a place where you can contribute at this point, even when it's really deep at wide receiver. And so that's maybe, again, the place where you'd want to see somebody like him, somebody like Clement, really starting to get some reps, regardless of where it is. I mean, Copeland looks looks the part when you see it, when you see some of the pictures on Twitter of him out there and sort of, what he's done under the program with Savage. And, once he can get right, I think he's going to be able to do some things that maybe some of the guys on the team can't do right now, being able to break some tackles and maybe hit a couple of long ones when he's able to break tackles, which isn't something that necessarily has happened at Florida a lot over the last few years. So, I think when you've got a dynamic athlete like that, you want to get him out on the field. You want to see what he can do. But obviously, it doesn't help to have him out there if he's not healthy. So, you get him as healthy as you can going into the fall and go from there.
All right. Will, you're going to love this one. Andrew Jeffrey says, positive. Looks like Franks looks like he's taking the next step, as well as EJ, negative. We can only beat FSU and Miami once this year.
I don't know how to respond to that, Dave. So.
Yeah, there was a way we could beat them twice, good for it. But, maybe there is. We have to play with them in a bowl game, but nah.
For that, Florida State have to make a bowl game. So.
Right. Oh. And if that's the case, maybe we beat Miami and Miami goes on to some high-level bowl game. But I don't think that's going to happen either. So, I'll take beating each team once. So let's see. Zachary Garner says, I haven't been there, but I only know from what I hear here on Twitter. But from everything I've heard, we're taking good steps forward in conditioning and scheme and what everybody seems to be in growing into their roles. So, I kind of wanted to look at more that you brought it up a little bit earlier and everybody growing into their roles. And when we did our kind of spring preview, the one position group I thought I wanted to bring up here would be tight ends and how they've been used a lot in the passing game so far, especially down the seam. And as you alluded to earlier, hey, look, we even got to see the famed shovel pass to a tight end that wears number 81. And then Dante Lang, I got to take this one. But Gamble has really impressed me in the catches he can make. And one on Saturday, he had defenders draped all over him and was still able to catch the ball. Pitts is still working a lot with the wide receiver position more. And I see him as a big matchup problem coming up this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to come down to their blocking, right? If the defense has to respect their blocking, then they have to send out base personnel when you've got the tight end out there. If they don't have to respect the blocking from the tight end, then they can put a defensive back on them. And so that, I think, is the, you know, it's great to see these guys going down the seam and making fantastic catches and being athletic and all those sorts of things. But, you know, Mullen's ability to scheme is really based, and we see this on the defensive side of the ball with all the guys who are so versatile. I mean, Bernie's ability to come down to linebacker gives them the ability to do all sorts of stuff because the guy's a safety. And so he can play, you know, he can play a one-on-one coverage with tight ends and have no problem. And so that sort of versatility on offense, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see whether they have a pass catching tight end and then a blocking tight end, or whether they can find a guy who can do both of those well enough that they can really exploit those matchups. But they certainly have a lot of talent at that position, and it's going to be interesting to see how Mullen uses it going forward.
All right, a couple more tweets here. Justin Woods says, I like how confident the quarterbacks look and how they have a grasp of the offense. I think that the cornerbacks are way deeper than I anticipated. I'm not really sure what to think of the offensive line. They have their moments. They look great. There are other times they get manhandled, and that's what we're going to get from a young offensive line right now. There are going to be some inconsistencies. They're going to run block well. Pass block is going to be worked on, as we mentioned earlier, but there's going to be some inconsistency and some up and downs right now. So, yeah, I think and then Micah Bowden says offensive line has the most to prove. Can they compete with SEC defensive line? So yeah, Will's just going to take some time, and as you said, and I think we said it back in our preview as well, I think we'll hear some good things, we'll hear some bad things about this offensive line, and it's just, to me, going to be a big guessing game until they line up against Miami.
Yeah, well, you can never really trust what you hear out of the spring practice anyway. I mean, you see the open practice, and you can get a little bit of a feel, and you can certainly see the guys who are out there excelling. But, you know, is Carter getting to the quarterback because the tackle isn't doing a very good job, or is the tackle playing really, really well and Carter's just excelling? You know, you can't really tell that just because you don't know, right? Now, the good news is that they don't have to block an SEC offensive line week one. They just have to block an ACC defensive line week one. And so, you know, it's not playing Wofford or something like that, but it's not, I would say, not an SEC quality defensive line, or at least not LSU or Georgia or Alabama. So, you know, they're going to come out, and it's going to be good competition to start with, but I don't know that it's necessarily going to be elite. And, you know, we'll get to see how they progress from there.
Speaking of Miami, Will, Tate Martell gets eligible, and if he can win the quarterback battle at Miami, the Gators will be his first opponent, and he's in a battle with Nakosi Perry and Jaren Williams. Those three have been getting pretty much equal reps with the first-team offense so far for Miami, so there's no clear-cut starter early in spring ball, and not sure if there will be a winner in the spring. And look, I see it as, and if I'm Miami, hey, look, they held an advantage of not being able or not needing to name a starter, and if I was them, I'd keep the Gators guessing as long as possible. I mean, I don't think it really matters, as I'm not high on the quarterbacks from Miami, but Martell is that kind of dynamic, you kind of think Johnny Manziel type there, kind of running around trying to make plays happen. I'm not sure how that fits into a Dan Enos offense. We don't really know much about Jaren Williams either. He's got a big arm. And Perry was a train wreck last season for the Canes. So if he wins the job, then I'd be worried if I was a Canes fan. But, you know, we had our very own quarterback turnaround here last season. So he could get turned around for him as well. He turns the ball over way too much from what we saw last season. Can that get fixed? But Will, with Martell getting his waiver cleared, it certainly puts an even bigger spotlight on this game that was, you know, already getting it with a big rivalry game and the date being changed and being the kickoff game for the 2019 season.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, once Martell got cleared, it was, you know, the thing I tweeted out was, hey, there's no excuses now, right? Yeah. I mean, you can't say, well, we would have won if we'd have had Martell. It's like, now you've got the opportunity. And whether he's starting or whether he's the backup or whether he's the third string, you had him there, you got the transfer, and there's no excuses. Now, I will say, when you look at Martell's pedigree, I mean, so he's a four-star, 56th rated overall nationally, so really a pretty good player. You know how I love completion percentage as a way of trying to translate from high school to college. His senior year, he had 63.3% completion percentage and averaged 11 yards per throw. It's not really going downfield all that much, so I don't think you should necessarily expect him to come out bombing. Now, he did run for almost 1,300 yards, though, his senior season as well, averaged 8.6 yards per rush. So, you know, you mentioned Manziel. Obviously, Martell's pretty short, and so maybe that's a pretty apt comparison. And gap integrity becomes important then, right? And so, you know, we've talked a lot about Emory Jones potentially spelling Felipe Franks and doing some things out of the read option. I think that's something you might also see with Martell, even if he doesn't win the job, that he's enough of a threat to throw the ball that you might see some stuff where they bring him in as a wrinkle and have him in, you know, for a couple of series where you're letting him use his legs as much as his arm. But, you know, he didn't play poorly when he played last year for Ohio State. I think, you know, I don't imagine Joe Burrow probably transfers from Ohio State unless he thought he was going to get beat out by Martell the next year as well. So, you know, I think he's a really good player. We'll see whether he fits into what Miami's going to do. And you know, he hasn't had a whole lot of time to actually play out on the field. And if we had a first-year starter at Florida, we'd be concerned too. And I'm sure Miami fans feel the same way.
Absolutely. But yeah, it definitely just ratcheted up Miami fans, their side of things for this game. They're definitely happy that he got eligible and that he's eligible to play now. But yeah, it's only going to make the trash talk that much better, Will, for the next few months here. And as we count down the days to the sole kickoff of the 2019 season.
I don't know. Is there any way we can appeal for this to be a game they schedule every year too? Because, I mean, I'm already having fun with this being the first game of the year and all the back and forth between the fans on Twitter and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's just fun, right? I mean, last year was great, but Charleston Southern isn't exactly getting my juices flowing game one. Yeah. You know, home and home with Miami, the sort of alternate the same way they do with Florida State would be something that I think most fans in the state of Florida would be in favor of. Now, you know, whether or not you could get Miami to agree to that and whether you could get Florida to agree to that, I'm not sure, but it certainly beats a home. It certainly beats a 2-for-1 with UCF.
Zing. Oh, UCF.
You know, they almost beat Duke.
They almost. They're going to the Sweet 16 anyway.
They won the Stanley Cup last year, didn't you hear?
Oh, all right, there we go. One more thing before we go here on this episode, Will, and Gators Breakdown, we hit 1 million overall listens on this episode when it gets out there this week, and I can honestly say I never ever thought it would come this far. I know I have thanked you out there every episode for listening, but this milestone is something I never really even thought about. When this thing started, hey, look, I was happy to get 150 listens an episode. You know, now every episode's about 6,000 listens throughout Gator Nation, and I can't thank you enough for trusting, enjoying, sharing what Gators Breakdown has become. I never knew it would lead to what it has. You know, former Gator players that come on, and you know, being able to trust us and come on and talk Gators football, ESPN and SEC Network personalities, reporters, writers, and bloggers that cover the Gators in college football, leading to the television station I have worked for the last 13 years, WJXT, partnering up and picking up Gators Breakdown. You know, I'm honored to be a voice for Gator Nation, and that you get joy out of this podcast. You have pushed me to do something I didn't think could be done, and have enjoyed every bit of it. So lastly, I have to thank Will, who has become such a great friend and a co-host and brings so much insight, along with Bill Sykes, who, you know, really pushed the envelope of this podcast with his content, and also Joey Vizzi, who jumped in early after his first few episodes and helped Gators Breakdown get off the ground. Some of you have been around since those early episodes, and we've grown together. Some of you have joined in between and recently. So I've met so many of you out there and pride myself on this being a fans podcast. I hope you see it that way. And as I have said since the very first episode, it will always be a fan first type of podcast, and we'll always make this thing about having fun first. So thank you for 1 million listens, and here's to many more, Will.
Hey man, congratulations. I'm not sure people realize how hard it is to do this sort of thing. And I mean, we love doing it and it's a blast, but the amount of work that you put into it's really impressive. So congratulations to you. And I'm just happy to be along for the ride. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, you think you have something unique to say and you think you've got something that's a little bit different. And the question is, will people like it? And certainly people like what you're doing. And I'm sure they're happy to see you keep doing it.
Yeah, I think, as I said, the moment it doesn't become fun, I won't do it. But I don't ever see that coming up.
Well, hey, man, I was talking to my mom today. I told her you were going to reach the millionth listen. And she's like, well, you got to give me a shout out on the podcast. So so she'll be listening to us while she's walking tomorrow. So,
awesome. So hey, mom. Yeah, that she might become the 1 millionth listener for sure. As I said, just a couple thousand away heading into this episode. So we'll definitely hit it when this episode gets out for the next couple of days here. But yeah, it's going to be it's a big milestone. I'm glad a lot of people have found joy in this thing. And I find a lot of joy in doing it. Absolutely, for sure. And I just didn't think it would get to this point and where it has grown. So, well, like I said, I can't thank you enough for, you know, everything that you do and helping me out.
Oh man, it's been fun. And I want to extend the same thing to the fans. I mean, you know, thank you to everybody for listening, for reading, for coming up to us and encouraging us, all that sort of stuff. So even some of the people who don't have such nice things to say, that's good too, because it's good to get constructive feedback from time to time. But, you know, this is fun. It's a blast to do it. Like you said, we'll stop doing it when it's not fun anymore, but it really is a privilege to be able to work with you, but also to be able to work or to be able to speak to the fans who are out there. And I think Gator Nation is the best set of fans that are out there. They're passionate, they're demanding, but that's what makes it fun. So, you know, we're going to keep going, keep chugging along and looking forward to what comes next.
There's never a dull moment, Will. Never a dull moment.
Three times a week at least, man. Whether you're trying to do one episode or not.
That's right. That's right. Well, hey, read reaction. Of course, we don't get into much basketball here on Gators Breakdown, but the Gators are out of the NCAA tournament here. And you had a really good article on, you know, the kind of the status of Mike White and comparisons to Billy Donovan and, you know, how if jobs in any danger or whatever. And, you know, kind of, you know, how's it been kind of going toward the basketball route of things on Read and Reaction? And what else you got coming up?
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, last year when Florida got bounced from the tournament, I wrote something about White and where he was and said, really, we need to assess 2 years from now. And the noise is getting louder and louder and louder. So I still say we need to assess next year. And certainly people can go take a look. I am not a basketball expert, but, you know, I can – there are some things I think from benchmarks that you want to look at between coaches. And I think he's a lot closer to Billy Donovan than he is to Lon Kruger. The question is Billy Donovan light good enough for some of the fans? And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But so coming up next, I'm going to be working on something with Franks, looking at what his ceiling will be for the 2019 season. And then also you'd mentioned the tight ends, and that's something I'm going to take a look at in terms of how Mullins used his tight ends in the past and maybe what he might do this year coming forward. Because I do think that that's a place where some two tight end sets might really be able to separate this offense and make it explosive. And I'm interested to see what he might do this year.
Yeah, I kind of set the Twitter world on fire too, and talking about Mike White, and you know, I quote, next year looms large, and I've been told that, I believe that, and that doesn't say with a bad season he'll be fired. It looms large, and as I think it is it's going to be the season that kind of I think determines whether it's kind of a downward trend for Mike White, or if it's the season we go back and look at and say, all right, there's a season that kind of launched what we know Mike White to be way down his tenure at Florida. So I think next year is so important. And I think in the trajectory of the program, can't say for sure whether, you know, if there's no six, you know, he's got a very good recruiting class coming in next year. And that's what a lot of people are banking on to kind of go along with that freshman nucleus of this season that we're in. But I do think you look at next year, the talent that they're bringing in, the expectations are going to rise. You're going to have to compete for the SEC. I think you need to make a deep tourney run with the talent that you are bringing in. That's going to be the expectation. So that's why I think next year is going to go a long way in determining just how long Mike White's tenure is at Florida.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really fair statement, right? To say that the expectation at a school that's won the SEC in the last, you know, and been a consistent competitor in the SEC over the last you know, decade or two decades really is going to want to be back at that level. I mean, you know, that is the expectation. Billy Donovan raised that expectation. I think we need to hold him to the standard that Billy Donovan was held to. You can't necessarily hold him to like Mike Krzyzewski standards. I don't think that makes a whole lot of sense. And with the realization that Florida is still a football school, but I think it's a fair assessment to say next year looms large because of who he has coming in, because of who he has coming back. I mean, Nembhard played really well this year and really grew into that role as the season went on. And by the time he got to the tournament, he was really sort of the engine that made the team go. You got 2 5-stars coming in next year, along with a 4-star big man. You know, at some point, you got to start winning the games. You can't lose 15, 16, 17 games every year. You're going to have to get one of those seasons where you go, you know, 30-6 or something like that. And I think White can do it. I think he's bringing in players who are high quality players. And then the question is going to be, can he convert that over into wins? But, you know, he's had some bad luck. I mean, with some injuries and some other things that have gone on, he made it to the Elite Eight a few years ago. So it's not as if he can't, and that team was really, very good. So it's not as if he can't coach. He coached very well at his previous stop before he came to Florida. So I think it's probably, you know, just because you're critical or just because you say this is a key year doesn't mean you want the coach fired. It's the same thing when I say something critical about recruiting. It doesn't mean I want Mullen fired. It means I want historical precedent indicates that this needs to improve. The question is, how does it improve? And does that sort of inform, you know, changes that he may make or things like that? Can you interpret what's going on based on what you're seeing in the numbers? And so I think that's sort of the same thing. You know, hey, Florida's got a huge recruiting class coming in for the basketball team, and it's going to be important to see how they progress. And, you know, it's not as if Duke has a bunch of seniors. I mean, they've got freshmen in there who are helping them win games, and that's the expectation in college basketball these days, and it's going to have to be the expectation next year for Florida.
Yeah, but absolutely, Will. But going back and looking at in February, if you would have told me this team makes the tournament and gets a win in the tournament, I probably would have taken it with the way that team was playing in February. So I'd say all in all, I thought Mike White did a pretty good job in kind of making up for where this team was at one point in the season, overcoming injuries, getting the freshmen to come along well. As I said, I know we don't talk a lot of basketball here, and I don't tweet about it a lot either, but I do watch it a lot and do follow the team as well. So as I said, from where they were at one point in the season, from when the season started and getting demolished by Florida State, as I said, when the SEC play started, didn't start off too well either. And like I said, February, I didn't think this team was a tourney team, didn't think they'd make the tournament, and then kind of went on a run, a couple of wins in the SEC tournament, played one of the nation's best teams in LSU tough every time they played them, beat them 2 out of 3 times. So there was some good and some bad, but definitely a lot to build on for next season.
Very much so. I mean, there was a lot of growth in that win over LSU. There was a lot of growth they showed in that win over Nevada. And quite honestly, I think there was quite a bit of growth that was shown in the loss to Michigan. You know, I mean, that game was close until you got deep into the second half. So, you know, did you think Florida was going to win that game? I don't think you did going in, but I think you can see the team growing, probably not as quickly as some fans would like, but, you know, that's the reality. And Mike White knows that better than anybody, right? He's paid very, very well to be the successor to Billy Donovan, and he understood what that meant when he signed on to do that. And so I don't feel sorry for him, but at the same time, I do think that we need to be fair in terms of how we assess what he's doing. And you know, some of the comments that I've seen about the job he's doing and his ability to coach and those sorts of things, I don't know that are necessarily based in the expectations of what Florida should be as a program. So that's what I tried to write about. And, you know, I've had plenty of people disagree with me.
Well, that's going to be about the extent of basketball talk for another year, I guess.
Every year we'll talk about him in the tourney, man.
Really good podcast out there, Florida Basketball Hour. You can get a lot more basketball talk there. Those guys do a great job out there. So, yeah, we won't talk about it too much. It's pretty much a football-centric podcast. But, you know, we'll talk about the hot topics in Gator Nation. And Mike White is certainly a big topic out there. So, Will, thank you again for joining me on this episode, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I always look forward to it. It's fun to talk with you and talk with everybody out there. And I look forward to the criticisms that come my way. So it's a good time. It's a good time. And I enjoy everybody who reaches out and lets me know what I've gotten right and what I've gotten wrong.
All righty, that's Will Miles. You can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC and his site, readandreaction.com. I'm the host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.